The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Hello, Fire Officer Jude. How are you doing today?
Pleasant good afternoon, Caribbean. Pleasant good afternoon to all our loyal listeners, you know. So this afternoon, Caribbean, you know, I was listening to the program a little bit earlier on, talking about the appropriate age for social media access for our kids and stuff like that. And you know, it's quite an interesting topic, and I heard quite a few different arguments, and you know, if you could drive a car at 17, that's a very serious responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, so to weigh in on the topic, I think it all depends on how we would want to manage. And we have technology to do that. So I'm all for the persons who say, you know what, let's monitor our kids, let's use the software to monitor, and let's let them be socially, how should I put, responsible.
Right.
So from an early age, they would need to have access, but they have to be socially responsible. You can't ban them from everything. They have to learn how to adapt in the modern world that we live in.
True. You're correct about that. Thank you so much for your input, sir, or your opinion, Fire Officer Jude, because this was going back and forth, and people watch now. Oh, gosh. Social media ain't easy, you know, Jude. It ain't easy at all. It ain't easy. So what are we going to talk about today? But before you tell me that, I have a really important question to ask. A friend of mine, she was listening to us last week, and she was like, but Carrie, you know, I didn't know it was. I was like, yeah, let's be real. She's like, girl, I learned so much. And she asked me a question, and I said, listen, Monday I'm going to ask you. And let me say good afternoon going out to Janice. I know she's locked in. She says it was a really interesting program last week, so I'm sure that she's locked in. And she wanted to ask a question. But before that, what's our topic this afternoon?
Also, this afternoon, we're going to touch on, remember I told you I always bring the relevant statistics to the nation, so they will understand the kind of environment that we operate in here in Trinidad. And a lot of people don't know that we do have a challenge with fire and fire safety in our homes. And so, Caribbean, this afternoon, I'm going to close off the year of 2025 by presenting the December statistics, because I presented from January to November when we ended off the year. And I was saying that I was hoping that the month of December would make me a liar and not be one of the most devastating months in terms of fire. So I have the statistics, and I want to discuss that, and I want to talk about what we're going to be doing in this current period in January as we're heading to the carnival, peak of the carnival season.
Yes, definitely. So let's get those stats.
All right, but don't forget the question, so hold that question.
Let me just write it down, because sometimes I just forget real quick and easy, you know. But yeah, let me just write it down. So guys, get into the conversation. I know you have a question for Fire Officer Jude Rogers. You can send that question to us via WhatsApp on 306-1065, or you can give us a call at 625-2257 or 627-3223. As a Fire Officer Jude Rogers, he's going to give us the stats up until December 2025.
That's right. So let's just focus in on December. And I said that December seems to be a period where we have an uptick in fires. And apparently there's a number of related issues that may cause things like that to ramp up. We talked about the period of December being that period where we have a lot of renovations, a lot of cleanup, a lot of upgrades that may be taking place with persons' homes. And true enough, we saw an uptick in fires. We had a total of 48 structural fires in the month of December. And 37 out of those, more than 75%, were residential fires, Caribbean. All right? So that says a lot. And I had reported that for the year to date, from January to November, we had 13 deaths by fires. 13. And I was hoping that we would not see a massive increase in that figure. But for the month of December, we had 6 deaths by fires, Carrie V, unfortunately. And so the figures for the year ending 2025, we moved from 13 in November all the way up to 19 deaths by fires.
Wow.
And I said before, the figures over the last 7 years have been averaging between 20 to 25 deaths.
Yeah.
But the only period where we saw a reduction was during the pandemic period, when most persons were at home and literally in their homes and were able to circumvent any major issues.
Yeah.
So, Caribbean, we still have a challenge there where it comes to fires. And I have some stats also on road traffic accidents for the month of December. And again, road traffic accidents for the month of December, we attended to 76 road traffic accidents in the month of December. And we had a total of 7 fatalities as a result of those road traffic accidents. So again, now that we're in the Christmas, out of the Christmas and into the carnival period, this is where we see another increase in road traffic accidents. And Carrie, true enough, last week, persons were in on the last week, Friday. You remember what happened on the East West Corridor on that highway?
It's 18 or something. It's 18 vehicles or something like that. It was a lot.
Something close to about between 15 to 18 vehicles were involved. Wow. And I mean, even if it may have not resulted in fatalities, think about the loss of time, the damage to person's property. Think about the whole slowdown in the productivity of the country.
The roadway as well, because I knew there were, I don't know if it was oil or gas. It had stuff on the roads.
And so the fire service had to respond to those issues and had to literally wash the road down and make sure that that slick was removed off of the road, because you don't want unsuspecting drivers to come into a scenario like that. So that leads me directly into one of the best tips that I can give for the carnival period. People, plan your trips ahead of time. You know that you're going to a particular event, begin the planning process from early and designate a driver or hire some sort of transportation to get you there. Now is not the time to get involved in an accident as a result of tiredness, having alcohol still in your system, or to be on the road trying to navigate after you've worked so much long hours or after you've partied for such a lengthy period of time. So we want your driver to be well rested and your driver to be aware of what's going on the road, and we take all the necessary precautions. I cannot stress that enough.
Absolutely correct. You know, Jude, I was just thinking about something as you mentioned that, right? I find now we in 2026 and I find parties or even fets, or even if we're having any big gathering and where people consuming alcohol or even working for a lengthy period of time, they should have something called a designated rest zone. Whereby, I don't know, that like like a big, I don't know, a car park or something, or area. If you want, you could go in your car, you could sleep on it. You'll be secure because we'll have police officers and them around, you know, making sure that nobody. I find we should do something like that, man. But
I know. I do know of events that does the corporate responsible thing, and they may hire persons like Arrive Alive who would carry out breathalyzer testing, and they'll have what is called a sober zone. I am very much aware of that, and I want to say shout out to Jerome and the rest of the gang, Christine and they at Arrive Alive, who we've worked along with over the years in promoting road safety and public safety. And they would advocate for this. A number of events would hire the technicians at Arrive Alive. And this is a voluntary thing. And so kudos to the events that and the event managers that take it seriously and actually promote the safety, because they know that they brought you to that event. You came out to an event, they enjoyed the event, they would have given you alcohol, it may be an all-inclusive, but they see it fit to have the corporate responsibility of ensuring that you leave their event sober.
Even if you ain't drink forever, Sir Judy, you ain't drink. Use your driver, right? Let me say, for instance, use your driver, you're a designated driver, and you're tired.
Right. And so that's an additional layer that you're talking about. You're absolutely correct. So there should be a zone or area where you can say, listen, you know, you can stay parked here. All these car parks are going to remain open for the next 3 to 4 hours or whatever the case may be. And persons could be allowed to leave at their own leisure, making sure that, and you could get tested. You could get tested and say, okay. Or you can say, yes, I have been refreshed. I've been revived. You have water available. You have coffee or whatever the case may be to help your patrons, even the workers who work at events. Because sometimes after an event, you have quite a few service providers who remain to ensure that there's a proper breakdown of the event afterwards. Those persons may also be going from event to event. And so there's a lot of room for accidents to take place that we are not aware of. All right? So we must be careful with that. But I want to head back over to the fire statistics before we jump into the carnival period. I want to head back over to the fire statistics, which suggest, and persons keep asking the question, Caribbean, what is the number one cause of fires in households in Trinidad and Tobago? And I can safely say, based on the statistics, that the electricity, and not just electricity, but the way we interact with electricity in our homes and also the electrical wiring and how we treat electronic items in our homes has been one of the major sources of hazards and fires within our homes. And I want to just simmer on that a little bit. Do we have a call on the line?
No, we don't. Not as yet. I'll let you know what we do.
Right. So what that means, there are a number of risk factors, and what we need to do is to do that risk assessment. So start by saying, one, what's going on with the electrical wiring in my home? Am I safe?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know that? What you need to do is to call in your electrician and have the wiring in your home tested every 5 years and get your electrical certificate renewed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of persons have not done that. And so we still see fires occurring. Even up to this weekend, I would have investigated a fire, Caribbean, that involved electrical in nature. I'm not going to suggest where or what.
Yeah.
But it was as simple as an overloading of a circuit.
Wow.
That was plugged in for some time, normal, everything. But at the end of the day, these circuits must be checked for the resistivity so you can tell when there may be a breakdown in the insulation and the possibility for heat to be developed along that electrical wiring.
Yeah.
So you can only do that if you're doing your checks every 5 years. And I would even dare say, some persons might want to do it annually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just make sure you can never be too safe.
Yeah, all correct. Right? Now, I remember we discussed that before, and guys, get into the conversation. Just as Fire Officer Jude Rogers said, you need to ensure that you have a proper fire certificate, because then you will go by a non-registered
certificate.
You would go by a non-registered electrician, and you'll say, yeah, everything good, man. Everything good to go. So let me do the right thing.
Certified electrician. One who has their wireman or wirewoman's license, who can go to the inspectorate on your behalf and have them, that professional or that government agency, come in and check on that for you. All right? So that's one level of protection that you have there. The other thing is to go through your home and identify any pieces of equipment which are faulty, electrical items which are faulty, any circuitry that you deem to be overload, meaning you have more than four items plugged into a double plug, so you know. We do have those items in our home. Some of us are plugged in. We may need to look at adding another breaker and another circuit to be run to supply electricity in a proper circuit to those electrical items. Anywhere that we're using extension cords for an extended period of time, meaning that you run an extension cord, but it's being used permanently, that is not an ideal situation, and that can lead to a failure of that particular electrical line.
Right.
Other scenarios will be where we have electronic items that have frayed wiring. For instance, you may have a heater, and the heater is shorting, and all you're doing, you just putting tape on it, and you just continue to use the heater or whatever electronic item that you may be plugging in from time to time. You want to secure those items, have them fixed, have the plug changed. It could be a fan, an electric fan. I have had scenarios where an electric fan has caused a whole apartment, a whole building to burn down.
Wow.
All right? So simple items like that. All right? So let's start with the electricity in our home. It's a heat source, and that's one of the ways to eliminate fires in our home.
Right.
And Caribbean, what has not happened in 5 to 10 years can happen in 1 second. I need to remind people of that. That unguarded moment.
Yes.
And all your possessions could be lost.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Fire Officer Jude, for that. And guys, if you're now joining us, welcome. Good afternoon. We are here with Fire Officer Jude Rogers. It's all about Safety Mondays right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Get your calls in. Get your messages in at 625-2257 or 627-3223. We are talking about fire prevention as well in general. And this is what Safety Mondays is about. Fire prevention and making sure we are doing the correct thing. Now, Fire Officer Jude, you said that one of the most common cause of house fires is electricity, right? What is another form? What is another way house fires can happen?
Well, definitely by way of negligence or errors and acts of omission. So let me just put that into perspective. We're carrying on busy lives. We're very busy. Sometimes we may leave an item on the stove. We may leave something lit. We may leave a candle or something that is still on. So that's an act or error of omission where we forget something. We may also create scenarios in our home where we of our own selves, you could fall asleep and let's say some persons are smoking. I've encountered this on multiple occasions. Persons cause their own homes to burn down by way of causing a cigarette that may not have been. First of all, I would suggest you don't smoke inside your home. I suggest that you don't leave open flames lit in your home. If you have lit a candle, whether it's a candle, a deer, whatever it may be, please turn those off before you leave home or before you go to bed. Things like that. So those are some of the other causes. And of course, we do have scenarios where we have persons who willfully raise fire and what I call an incendiary or arson, where someone willfully intends to cause harm and danger and they would cause a fire to be lit in your home. And normally that in itself is a criminal act, by the way. All right? It's a criminal act. So you would want those persons, if found to be evidence is suggesting that someone would have perpetrated that act, that person can go as far as be convicted of murder. Because if someone dies as a result of you lighting a fire, that carries a lifetime sentence. Wow. And that is literally murder. So just think about that. And sometimes that could have been unintentional, but you would have been the cause. And when I say unintentional, you may have, some persons may try to attempt to intimidate persons and they may do so by burning. But if that fire goes further and was to cause harm to the property and the person, and that person dies, now you have a murder charge on your hands.
Wow.
So there are situations like that happen. We treat with all of those situations as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for clearing that up, Fire Officer Jude. Get into the conversation, guys, at 306-1065. Oh, and as you're on that topic there, Fire Officer Jude, let our listeners know that if you have to burn anything, what's the steps and what's the process?
All right. So as you would have noticed, and I didn't highlight it, but even with all the rains that we were having in the month of December, we had 43 bushfires that the fire service responded to
43.
In the month of December.
Wow.
43 bushfires. And that figure is going to ramp up exponentially as we get more and more into the dry season. Mm-hmm. And so the dry season in Trinidad and Tobago begins from the 1st of December of 2025 and runs all the way down to the 30th of June 2026. And during this period, it is illegal to light outdoor fires. Listen to me carefully. It is illegal in the country of Trinidad and Tobago to light outdoor fires in Trinidad and Tobago during the period December 1st to the 30th of June 2026. So to do so, you need to apply for a fire permit. And those fire permits can be acquired at your nearest fire station, or they can guide you to the headquarters, which we have in each division. So in the Southern Division, the Munripo Fire Station, Central Division, the Chaguanas Fire Station. In the Northern Division, you have the Arima and the Ryson Road Fire Station. Mm-hmm. And in Tobago, you have the Scarborough and also Roxborough Fire Station. So the officers there, we have fire guardians who would respond by visiting your property, making an assessment of what you want to burn, how long it will take to burn that, how much you need to burn. They would prescribe the necessary measures and then they would recommend and issue the permit, and you only pay $10 for that permit. It's not an everlasting permit to burn for throughout the year.
Well, I know going on say
specific period.
I know going on say. Well, I feel like I can burn this thing from now till the kingdom come, but no,
no, no,
we
no.
can't.
No, no, no. So it may be just for about 2 to 3 days, depending on the amount, right? Mm-hmm. Or we have a call on the line.
Yes, we do have a call. Let me just get it in. 625-2257. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ms. Carey.
Hey.
Good afternoon, Officer Jude. So recently I visited the New Grand area in a school trace there. There's a branch road. And I saw one of these guys in the road there. He has one of those metal drums. And for what I understand, he don't put garbage out. He just keep burning it in the neighborhood there all the time. 24 hours a day. And I feel like, why somebody don't report this? Because it's a health hazard, one. And then the neighborhood is stinking with whatever, fumes, plastic, whatever you burning. And I think, like, things like this need to be heavily fined and maybe jail or something else. So I don't know if any advice, officer, that maybe the neighborhood there, the neighbors could probably take action, or I'll listen off here. If you could advise, you know, what how to go forward, because I personally find it's really distasteful, it's unhealthy, that you have this big fancy house and you decide to put a metal drum on the side of your house and burn your garbage daily.
Wow.
And stinking up the neighborhood. I mean, that's crazy, isn't
it? That's crazy. Thank you so much for your call. Yeah, man, thanks so much. Fire Officer Jude?
Thank you for your call, caller. And yes, there are remedies to this. And I would suggest that you can discreetly capture this particular person on film if you can without getting yourself in harm danger. Oh, we have another call on the line? Let's take it and then we'll answer both questions.
We do, Let's hear who's there. Hello, good afternoon.
Pleasant good evening.
Hey,
Fire Jude, what we're saying here is that if even they light another drum fire side, you're that illegal then?
Yes, it is. It is illegal. It has all outdoor fires. All.
Any light up any outdoor fire, or you're supposed to get permission?
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So we just take a little chance. According to the guidelines. So you can be charged by, who can charge you then even there? They know you're lit a fire.
On summary, it's a summary offense, and the charge can be laid by the police. The charge can be laid by police officers the advice. So let me get into it, because this is a very, very good topic that we're on here right now. So, Caribbean, I'm not talking about things like barbecues and where you're cooking and stuff like that, you know, in your backyard. I would even suggest that if you wanted to light a bonfire on the beach or something for a camp during this period, you have to get a permit for that. All right? You have to be very, very careful of that, because these fires can actually get away from you, and then it can cause a forest fire. So you have to be careful how you go about doing that. So this is cooking is different from lighting an outdoor fire in a drum. An outdoor fire in a drum, you want to burn like leaves, little cardboard boxes, pallets, whatever the case may be, more carbonaceous material. You still need a permit for that.
Yes.
You do. And so again, let me answer the question for the caller. On summary conviction, meaning what an officer, of whether a fire officer or a police officer, upon observation of a person breaking this particular law, they can bring that person to the police officer attention and they can then lay the arrest. If you provide evidence in the form of video coverage and you can identify the person, and if you catch that person in the act, so some persons think you have to catch the person in the act. No. If you bring evidence and we examine the evidence, and we can identify the person, then it would just be to bring that evidence before the court and the police officers will lay the arrest. And I want to let you know, for the caller who called earlier on, that particular person may be doing that over and over. That's an easy fix. You can, once you observe the person, you can dial 990, make the report, or you can dial 999 and make the report to the police officers, and they can respond and come on point, or what we call in situ, and see where this person is actually breaking the law. The fines for that is, upon summary conviction, is 20,000 and 6 months imprisonment. Call on the line.
Yes, we do. We have another one. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Calling from
Durbaso Trees. What's up?
Every year from here, all the way up the highway, I see grass fires. And, you know, I know that this is not controlled and so on, that it just goes haywire. But I'm thinking a little bit deeper than that. When a particular area escapes in one season, one dry season, the next dry season, it's worse. Because you have 2 years' growth, worth of growth there, as we call the donkey grass, some people call bull grass. It rolls over, it gets very, very long, and it tumbles and it rolls over, and new growth grows on top of it and so on. And then that would create additional dry stuff as time goes by. So the fire, and that's just one kind of thing, little bush and trees and leaves and whatnot, it's all the same in terms of if it doesn't burn this year, next year it will be twice as bad, and the third year. So I kind of feel relieved when I see these little fires, you know, thinking, well, okay, next year it's going to be the same thing again and not twice as large. And if the fires are any bigger, you actually can't drive by. The roads are blocked and so on with the smoke. So I kind of feel relieved when it gets burned every year. I want your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call, Durbaso Trees. Fire Officer Jude?
That's an interesting point of view, the Bassett, Trace, and I think I know what he's speaking about. Mm-hmm. So, Caribbean, there's a situation where if in early in the season a particular area is burnt,
right,
that particular area no longer has the potential to cause a major fire in deep into the bushfire season.
Oh.
Because when you burn that, the burnt material, it takes a while for it to be replenished.
Oh.
And so now you have fresh growth, and that growth is very green, and that takes a lot more accelerant or more fire literally to start up a fire in that particular area.
Mm.
So I understand what he's saying. And there is the potential, though, however, in situations along the highway, and this is one of the challenges that we have. Along the highway, you really cannot pinpoint any one particular person who may cause a fire in the median or on the side of the highway. And Caribbean, you know, the visibility for drivers become very, very dangerous when there's a fire, bushfire running along the highway. You see cars having to slow down. You see persons putting on their headlights.
Yeah.
You see persons putting on hazard lights. And then persons who may have asthma, who are breathing disability. Some people are really hard pressed. Caribbean, you could imagine being in a standstill traffic with a bushfire on the highway.
Hmm, that's problems.
So we have a lot of challenges. So what I would say to the caller is the best prevention for bushfires in this country is awareness, and for us doing the right thing out of a voluntary position.
Yeah.
And so that is what our campaigns have been like. And we're having these discussions not only with the fire service, you know, WASA, Ministry of Rural Development, even the URP sections and these places that does the cleaning. Because if we clean the vegetation on the side of the roadway, and if we clean the vegetation on entering forested areas, it limits the amount of vegetation that is there to be involved in a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the way to go. Awareness, training, and people understanding how we impact on the environment in the long run.
And I agree. I agree with that 110%. Fire Officer Jude, I just thought of something, right? How does the fire service, deal with bushfires? Let's say, what do you all do? Is it that you all go out it, or you just make a drain? Like a dig part so that it wouldn't go...
Like a fire stop. Yeah. Like a fire stop.
What do you all do?
So, Caribbean, you know, that's such an intelligent question, and I must say that, because you think, to me, you're putting yourself in the shoe of a fire officer. I wonder how do they actually stop these fires? Caribbean, there's some, let me create a scenario. There's a fire in Mount St. Benedict above the monastery, going through the hillside.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to go up there and fight that fire, Caribbean?
Well, fire service.
So, no fire truck is able to go that far. They will reach up to where the tanks are, and then they can go no further. Fire officers have to take what we call fire beaters. So you can literally beat out the fire, or snuff out the fire by we have these heavy rubber mallets that we make like a mop, but it has rubber at the end,
right,
and you literally beat the fire out. So we literally have to create like a band of fire officers just going and surrounding and trying to do. There is another technique that we use, which is sort of like what we call a burn back. So, right, what the barrister Trace was saying, you burn control. You do a control burning, and it creates a fire stop.
Right.
So when the fire reaches that point where you burn, it can't jump over the burn area. There's nothing more to burn.
Right. I was thinking,
but that is when
I'm
things
on.
Get really, really out of hand. So there's some fires where we cannot use water. The fire truck is unable to access that area, and we're going to have to literally go in and beat out the fire literally and sort of control the fire within those zones. But when you have large acreage of that is under fire, and you have heavy undergrowth and trees involved, Caribbean, all we can do in some instances is fall back to a line, so certainly like the roadway, and we control the fire from crossing one road and going across
to
the
next. Because I have seen that on many occasions where when you look up in the hills, you're seeing the line of fire going on. It's like, but how the fire officers reaching up there? Well, that means all you're good with beating, boy. You understand? All your hands strong with that beating. But yeah,
not easy, because just getting into those zones, you have to hike all the way into, sometimes you have to use trails to get in there, and it's not an easy task.
Wow.
And so sometimes those fires get away from one a garden that may be high up in the forested areas, and that's why we ask the farming community to know how they're utilizing burning around this period of time. So we have to be very careful with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so those are some of the challenges that we face.
You know, fire officers, you always see real MVPs, you know. I'm saying, I put it now there. You see all the fire officers locked on and listening? Big up all, you know. All these real MVPs, but I can't imagine myself going up there and hiking and trailing and beating this fire like if it's a snake. I can't imagine myself doing that. Y'all are the real MVPs, dude.
I'm gonna take this opportunity to reach out to our land search and rescue team and the ambulance section of the Trinidad and Tobago Fire Service that have been involved in several rescues within recent times. You've heard about the hikers and the rescues that we've done where persons have either broken their leg or fallen, gotten injured, or even the retrieval of persons who may no longer, you know, be with us.
Yeah.
And it's sad. But fire officers have to respond to that. And I want to thank the Hunters Association for volunteering and going out there. Members of the Trinidad and Tobago Defense Force, who are also part of that action, and the police service, Trinidad and Tobago Police Service. You know, we work hand in hand. And, you know, sometimes people don't see the connection and the interaction that is there between these services. And I want to let you know that our national security apparatus, we work together on a lot of these operations, and it's all to make sure that we protect members of the citizens of this nation. And so for the period coming up, you know, we have a lot of hikes that are going to take place coming up, and I know the Hiking Association is, you know, really in a cautionary mode right now. We'll be looking to find answers to avoid some of the challenging situations that have been facing the hiking fraternity. You know, and my heart goes out to those who have lost a loved one. You know, I just want to say that up front. And I want to say, let's be wise about hiking during the rainy season.
Correct, very, very wise.
And even in this dry season that is very rainy, we have to be very careful.
Yeah.
All right?
Now, Forever Sir Jude, we have a message here on WhatsApp. Let me get it in for you. Good afternoon, Kyrie V, and good afternoon to you, Forever Sir Jude. Well, Gil, most of these neighbors around by me burn rubbish. Every week, someone burning trash in their backyard. I have to lock up my windows. If I report them, they will know it's me and the ones closest to me are not nice people. They burn plastic containers and even their old plastic fans. Wow. So, she said that's how they will know it's her. Oh, wow.
All right. So, what we could do is use this program to encourage your neighbor and say, listen, you know, we found out that you could only pay $10 for a permit. And what's the nice part about it? If you're burning in a barrel or in a heap that is within your yard, that's an easy permit to get.
Yeah.
Because you have a very controlled environment. And we're gonna issue that permit to you very easily. It's only $10.
How long does it take to get it when you apply for it?
Kyrie, that process can happen within a few days. Very, very easy. From the time you come in and you apply, and once the officers can go out and do a site visit for you quickly, once they are able to do that. But I'm saying the turnaround is just a couple days.
Right.
To get that done. What's better to have the comfort of having a legal permit to do the activity which you know is illegal without the permit?
Yeah.
And you can safely burn, and anybody comes to you can say, no, look, listen, I have my permit, you know.
Come down from there, I'm a permit, yes.
$10. And I'm following the instruction. I'm following the instructions of the officers. I have a barrel of water, I have additional and you supervise the burning.
Yeah. Oh, I have another question for Officer Jude. Can someone get two permits at the same time? Meaning, so I apply for a permit and you give me, like, let's say, for instance, a week to burn something, right? And then can I apply for another one to give me another week for something else? Can that happen?
That is possible. You can bring your particular situation to the fire officers and they will look at it, because some of the burning that may take place may go beyond the week permit and you may need to go back to get another permit.
Right.
So it comes like you're going for a renewal or an extension of the existing permit.
But can I do it one time?
No, I would suggest that you burn and they come back and they look at what they'll do, what's called a risk assessment.
Right.
So they will reassess and see what's needed for the second burning, for the second permit.
Yeah. All right, I got you. We have another message here on WhatsApp. This one is coming from Cash. Cash asks, what about helicopters with buckets and seawater? Have you all thought of that? Right.
So I have seen the Bambi, they call it the Bambi bucket.
We live in an island.
And, what you would have to do, Kola, you would have to have the resources, first and foremost.
True.
You would have to have a helicopter that is so outfitted to carry such a load. And yes, I have seen it being utilized in Trinidad and Tobago. It all depends on the availability of that arm of the Ministry of National Security.
Mm.
All right. So once that particular arm, the Air Guard or whoever is responsible for the NOC, whoever is responsible for that particular arm, once they have those resources are functional and we call on them, sometimes through the ODPM, we may ask for assistance in coordinating such.
Right.
We can get that support. Because accessing remote areas, trust me, what I talked about the fires in the hillside, you're only going to access some of them using that Bambi bucket, especially.
Nice.
All right.
I have another one from Torrance. Torrance said, good afternoon to you, Kyrie V, and to your guest, Mr. Rogers. Forestry Division also provides a fire watch crew to cover the dry season. I had an experience using the fire beater, and it was not easy. I want to test all that. When are they bringing us food for sure?
I neglected to also, they are very integral parts. So a shout out to my counterparts in the forestry division.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know of some a program that was being run by the UTT, where they were actually training persons for the resilience and for responding to bushfires in their community. And so there are quite a few persons who have been trained to identify these risks in the community and to also bring about a response right within the community. So you're not even waiting for the fire service. They can respond because they have been trained and they can tell and they can respond to some of these issues early on.
Okay.
Especially in the remote areas.
Yeah.
You know, the far-flung areas, the Blanchiches and the Marugas and the Matlot and those areas where it's going to take a lengthy time to get into those communities.
Right.
You need to have knowledge, know-how, and resilience in those areas.
Mm-hmm. All right. Something I was going to ask you just today. Oh, right. So, you know how y'all will have, the fire service will have the display of the different appliances. When are they doing the water meter? I want to try that. I want to see that.
So, Kyrie, normally when we have, there's nothing stopping you from visiting a fire station. Eh? I will tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
Around this period, we have a lot of school visits where the primary schools, the early childhood centers, they would write to the various fire stations. They'll call and they'll book a date when they can come and visit. And yes, of course, we would want to demonstrate to the children and also the teachers, and sometimes the parents come along with them.
I would love to.
You know, and they get a ride in the appliance and they get to see what we call an appliance, and they realize, well, wait, no, not every fire truck you see have water in it. Some
True.
Of them, you know.
I learned that right here. I learned that here on Safety Mondays.
Very important. And so we would want persons to experience the fire service in a more up close up manner.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that.
Yeah.
Because the last time I tried the a miniature version of the Jaws of Life. Remember I told you that? Yeah, boy, that was real cool. I find it was real cool. And those fire officials, the fire officers, they had to be real strong, though. I must say that, though. They are real.
Could you imagine
muscles,
the miniature version is pretty heavy?
Boy, that's what the guy said, too. Huh? That's what the officer said. I was like, I could imagine. All right, fire officer dude, guys, it's just about 8 minutes away. Of course, we have time for a few phone calls. If you can, give us a call at 625-2257 or 627-3223. Can I ask you my question now, Fire Officer Jude? Yeah,
floor is all yours.
Nice.
All yours.
My friend Ginny's big up herself. I know she's locked in. And she asked me to ask you. She said, if someone catches a fire, right? Whereby, like, let's say, for instance, someone throws liquid on them and they caught fire. Mm-hmm. What can someone do to assist? What should they do to, I don't know, possibly out the fire or make sure that they're kind of safe?
All right. So that's a very good question. And one of the key things is the fact is that the clothing that you have on is going to be one of the main items that is going to sort of accelerate the fire if somebody throws, let's say, some liquid or something that is flammable on you.
Mm-hmm.
What we tell persons to do is to stop, drop, and roll. So the same similar action of what a fire beater would do when you drop to the ground, Carrie V, and of course, this person is on fire, they're probably disoriented. I would sort of get a fire-resistant type blanket, not a woolen blanket, something like that is thick like a jeans base or something that is a little bit resistant to fire,
mm-hmm.
and I would cover that person to smother the fire, because in so doing, I am removing the oxygen from that fire, and you need oxygen for a fire to persist.
Oh.
And I would get that person onto the ground and sort of roll them on the ground to snuff out the fire.
Oh.
But of course, you want to move them away from whatever liquid that may have fallen and whatever the source of the fire is.
Oh.
But the key thing is to get away from that zone, stop, drop, and roll.
Okay.
If you're there and you're helping the person, so notice I didn't tell you to spray them with an extinguisher. I didn't tell you to soak them down with water.
Well,
all right.
I mean, that was all my right? first
I'm
thought.
I'm telling you to smother the person with some sort of fire resistant, a fire blanket, a thick jeans type material, something that is not going to propagate the fire.
Hmm.
Literally, you need to snuff out that fire. And you don't want to damage the person. You don't want to put another chemical on that person to get into their skin. Because if you get burned, your skin is going to be raw. And now you're placing a chemical on that person.
True. Right? Yeah, boy, that makes sense.
One of the more effective, if you have to use a fire extinguisher, a CO2, which is a carbon dioxide, is going to be highly effective and will have little or no damaging effect on the person's skin or tissue. So when you see a race car and a car gets into an accident on, let's say, on the Formula One track, you'll always see the fire officers coming with CO2.
Yeah.
And just think about you for Carnival jumping up in front of the stage and the person on top spraying CO2 on you. What happened? That's a sort of cooling effect.
Yeah.
Very cold, right?
Yeah.
But it also is able to eliminate oxygen from the fire triangle and snuff out the fire.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Two levels to fix that situation.
So she locked on. So Janice, I hope your question have been answered and continue keeping it locked to Safety Mondays, eh? Yeah, man.
And Caribbean, you know, the children know this, eh? When we go to the primary schools and the preschools, we tell the children to stop, drop
and roll. Yeah, like the first step.
Once you keep that in mind, you say, hey, what do I do? And it's very effective. It stops all the fire. It smothers the fire when you do that.
Yeah. All right, Fire for St. Jude. Thank you so much for today. And you know what we'll do next week, Monday, after God, same time, same place, right?
I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, I can't wait. Thank you so much for joining us today, Fire for St. Jude.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.